Okay, hello. I felt like I was watching a clone of myself speaking last talk. We have almost exactly the same ambitions. And I think there's going to be a lot of similarity in our talks. But on the other hand, he's taking a completely customized approach. And what I want to try to advocate today is the idea of piggybacking on an existing industry for making computer-generated holograms, specifically the Blu-ray industry. They've literally spent, I don't know, who knows, how many hundreds of millions of dollars in perfecting the Blu-ray mastering process. And I, for the last 8 years, I've been working with a company that's been bought by Sony, and I've had the opportunity and the honor to meet the engineers and people at Sony who are responsible for the Blu-ray development. And I am just so excited that this could be just almost immediately plugged in to making computer-generated holograms with accuracies and precisions very comparable to the previous speaker. So that's the substance of my talk today. And if you want to reach me, get in touch with me, please write down my email address, because the one that's actually on the listing for the conference is not mine. It'll eventually get to me because I know who that is, and he'll send it to me. But this is actually my email address, so please keep that in mind. And also, that's my website, so if you want to learn more about me, you can go there. I do have a commercial product for doing optical design in Mathematica called Optica, which I'm the author. This is probably, my introduction here is most likely going to be completely obvious to everyone, but I still feel like going through it, if nothing else, just for sake of completeness in my discussion. But not long ago, you know, limitations in memory capacity and processor speeds have really stifled the idea of making direct computer-generated holograms as a bitmap. I remember as an optical scientist 20 years ago, I had a file that was probably not more than 50 megabytes that represented probably $500,000 of research, and it was stored in one location on an optical disk. And somebody in the lab decided to overwrite it because they didn't have enough disk space, and I lost that data. It was, and everybody was devastated, I have to say. And we've come so far with technology. So as I've already said, Blu-ray technology and phase transition mastering in particular could open the door to mass-produced computer-generated holograms with unbelievable performance. The key to it is being able to do terapixel recording and terabyte calculations. And again, as I've said, this was a problem not very long ago. But today, it's almost a trivial thing to solve. In many respects, you know, computer-generated holograms are just like any other digital image. The only difference is that you're using phase information instead of amplitude or absorption or transmittance. You're interested in the phase, recording phase information. And if just as a simple example, if you have a 100 by 100 millimeter hologram, which is exactly the surface area of a Blu-ray disc, with a 0.1 micron spatial resolution, that's equivalent to a digital camera sensor that has a million rows by a million columns. So this translates to a terapixel of points or a terabyte of data. But the big problem is, how do you mass produce a hologram? I mean, it's one thing to make it once, but how are you going to actually make it with sufficient precision that you can effectively replicate it as many times as you want and have the same performance? That's where the Blu-ray disc comes in. with its high spatial resolution and optical characteristics, it essentially matches the requirements for a good computer-generated hologram. There's almost no difference in their performance characteristics. But before I go launch into the Blu-ray disc, I would like to just touch on the three alternative systems that are, in my mind, are competing with each other today to make computer-generated holograms. And they have very different approaches, and we've seen all of them at this conference. Different people have discussed each one of these already, or will be discussed, perhaps. The first one, which was the first one that came to my mind 20 years ago when I was thinking about making a holographic printer, was to basically mix a local reference beam with a Fourier transform angular spectrum from an SLM. And that's what we have here. So basically, you're writing pixel by pixel, but each pixel is actually modulated with a carrier wave, the reference beam. And I'm guessing that, but I'm not sure, Craig, but I think that Zebra must be based on something like that, but maybe not. I don't know, because no one's told me. Yes, okay. All right. Not trying to give away trade secrets or anything. Yeah. And this has some huge advantages. And I think Zebra's obviously taking advantage of them. First of all, it's the fastest possible way of producing a hologram. I mean, you can just rip across the hologram and make it very quickly. You can use Lippmann-type thick reflection holograms, which is an obvious advantage. And you can use arbitrarily large hologram formats with full parallax and full color. And you have minimum registration issues because each spot that you write on the hologram is many microns in dimension. It's just not difficult to register it. So there's huge advantages to it, but it also has a few disadvantages. You have a little more limited spatial resolution in the holographic image. Potentially, you could mitigate that, but it's more of an issue, I think, with this technique. The other thing is, it has a limited use for embossed and Blu-ray mastering. I think it may be possible to make a system do those things, but I think it's more limited. The other thing is, as our previous gentleman spoke about in his talk, I would also like to discuss the idea of having arbitrary scattering patterns. Instead of just using sinusoidal grading structures, you could do arbitrary. Now, when you're using the approach of mixing a carrier reference beam, you really are limited to sinusoidal grading structures, as far as I can tell. Almost, anyway. Finally, it's less flexible for making HOEs. The next approach that I'll mention briefly is the one that our good friends in Serbia have... is it Serbia, guys? Maybe I'm getting confused. In Prague, let's put it that way. Anyway, it's an incoherent method of basically you image the SLM as a bitmap onto the surface of the hologram, and you stitch the bitmapped images together. You photoreduce it and stitch it together. It's a really great idea, and and it works really well. It gives you fast hologram write times. The spatial resolution is pretty much great. You can write arbitrary grading patterns, and it's good for HOE production. The disadvantages are that you're limited to a thin transmission hologram format. It's non-standard for Blu-ray mastering, and that's where I'm concerned with it. And it's a little more tricky making color holograms. You basically have to take some form of rainbow Benton geometry to do that. And you have more registration issues because you really need to get those pixels really lined up with each other on almost a nanometer scale. Finally, I'm getting to the one where my talk's leading toward, and that is using an incoherent single-point bitmapped computer-generated hologram. I believe my previous colleague has already discussed a similar approach. The advantages are many. you can have the most maximum spatial resolution that you can possibly get in a hologram image. And by the way, this line at the top, is not accurate. I meant to put that down on the spatial resolution on the grating on the hologram itself is less than 70 nanometers, and the writing NA is 0.85. It's not the spatial resolution of the image. I apologize. Same production methods as Blu-ray mastering. I've said these things before. You can make arbitrary diffraction patterns. I think everything here I've already said. Disadvantages. Pretty much the same as before in the previous system. Almost exactly the same disadvantages. So the real advantage of this one is that it's standard with the Blu-ray mastering, and it gives you much the highest possible spatial resolution aside from using electron beam lithography, which would have the highest possible spatial resolution on your grating. How am I doing for time, by the way? Am I good? Will it? Oh, it's right there. So the physical benefits, I'm going to talk some now about the physical benefits of bitmapped computer-generated holograms. I'm actually not going to talk very much about the processing of it or the optics much further. It's in my paper more to some extent. The big benefit is noise reduction that I can see. I think there's a huge potential when you make bitmapped holograms to reduce the noise in the holographic image. That assumes, of course, that you can write multiple phase levels. If you're doing a binary writing, which is the easiest, it's still very much easier to write a binary hologram, then some of these noise reduction benefits may not be as available, but it is a potential, and it is huge. I'll discuss it briefly here. If we look at a classic geometry for making a hologram, we have a reference beam interfering with the object space, and I just picked three points or three regions in the object space, and those are wavefronts. They don't have to be spherical waves. They're just arbitrary wavefronts from those three points. And if you look at the interference at the hologram plane, you get this classic result where the interference intensity is just the amplitudes multiplied by their complex conjugates. And if you expand that result, you get a lot of terms. And this is just the way of illustrating the noise in the holographic image. Three of those terms are your image terms, the ones when during reconstruction you actually care about. Three of them are the conjugate image terms, which usually you don't want for the most part, especially when you're making an inline hologram. You really don't want them. And finally, you're left with the noise and bias terms, which everybody doesn't want. Everybody wished these would just go away. And in normal classic holography, there's really nothing you can do about it. Those terms are there for the ride, whether you like it or not. You can reduce them by increasing your reference beam intensity ratio relative to the object beam intensity, but they're there. Not true with bitmapped holograms. You can just get rid of them completely. You can even get rid of the conjugate image terms by making a blazed grating structure. If you can somehow blaze that hologram, then you can get rid of those. I don't know how to do that in general. I don't even know if it's possible, but I'd like to talk with you. If anybody here has ideas how to make a blazed hologram in general, I'd love to talk to you about it. The other benefit is you can have polychromatic performance without having multiple laser wavelengths involved. All you need is one laser wavelength. Because you're writing it one pixel at a time, it's an incoherent writing process. And you can just specify any spectrum you wish in your computation of the computer-generated hologram. And that, of course, gets rid of all the aberration issues, all the distortion and magnification issues that you normally have to worry about when you're making other kinds of computer-generated holograms. And finally, you can do arbitrary light scattering. What I mean by this is that Of course, holograms are usually, the origin is interference, right? So normally you use an interferometric origin to get your gradings. Not true, of course, with computer-generated holograms. And in principle, you could even use fractals or have some sort of, you could do an inverse calculation using the boundary conditions and do an electromagnetic field propagation and find the optimal shape or find a shape, and it has no bearing on the actual traditional holography. It's very exciting what may become possible with that. An obvious example is the blazed grating, which has a sawtooth profile, and of course that is normally not available with interference methods, though Jeff Odner was telling me he's actually been able to do it, but I was surprised by that. Okay. 2 minutes left. So let me do a very fast overview of phase transition mastering. It's so fast that this is the only slide I have. I don't have any pretty pictures about it. But you can go to the Sony website and learn all you want, you know, by looking into their system. Basically, it's using imperfect metal oxides that are deposited on a silicon wafer. And it's an 8-inch diameter silicon wafer, and these are oxides of tungsten and molybdenum, and the beauty of them is that they use a thermal thresholding to do the writing process. It's a non-chemical process, and it means you can do super resolution when you write into it. So when you write, it works by heating. It's a purely heating process. So you have to have a really intense spot. And that means you can only write one point at a time. You can't get enough intensity if you have multiple points, or you can't do a bitmapped imaging onto it even, because it's too weak. So you write one point at a time, and what happens is it heats up locally just at the very center of the Gaussian spot. So for example, in the Blu-ray mastering system, it has a numeric aperture of 0.85. That would normally give you a 400 nanometer diffraction limited spot. They can write better than 70 nanometers with it. And the other thing is, compared to electron beam lithography, it's many times faster. A normal electron beam lithography mastering process takes about 11 hours to complete. When you do Blu-ray mastering, it can be well under an hour. Actually, they're keeping that a kind of a secret. But from what I can tell, it's probably closer to 40 minutes that they can write a Blu-ray master, as opposed to 11 hours with electron beam lithography. And it only takes 4 processes to do a Blu-ray mastering process, where it takes 11 processes with e-beam lithography. And the other thing is, it's naturally conductive. So you don't have to, I've got 2 seconds left. Okay, it's naturally conductive, and therefore you can do electroplating directly onto it without having to do a coating step. Okay, I've kind of covered pretty much what I wanted to today. I'm going to list here, but my main emphasis, I think, is in holographic optical elements, but you can also, of course, use it for display applications. And you all know about display holograms. So I don't think I'm going to spend any time on that. How am I? Okay, so, but with HOEs, the real benefit here is, for the first time, you can make diffraction-limited holographic optical elements, and you might be able to replace very expensive optical systems, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of optics, by a few dollars worth of HOEs, because you can produce them with such high fidelity. And that, essentially, is my conclusion. Thank you very much.
Any questions for this speaker? Please use the microphone.
A Blu-ray is a multi-channel optical storage device. Were you envisioning putting different information about the holograms on the different channels at all?
I had thought about that, particularly with the Blu-ray movie industry. There's multiple layers. You can write up to 3 layers, I believe, quite as a standard, at least 2, and I think 3 layers. So I had thought perhaps you could make a cover art on a Blu-ray disc of, say, Harry Potter, and then have the movie line underneath it. So when the person puts in the movie, before they put it into the player, they can see Harry Potter, a hologram of Harry Potter, and then they put it in and play the movie. So yes, in that respect.
Interesting. Thank you for the nice talk. The noise, getting rid of noise between the different parts of the object, what we used to call intermodulation noise. That's very interesting. I never thought of that. I don't know much about Blu-ray, but it seems it's a sort of circular writing device.
Yes.
Is there any limitation? Can you access any point within that? Can you access all the points between the grooves?
Yeah.
And is there any kind of difficulty, for example, going from the center out? Is there any kind of circular symmetry that gets in the way of your idea?
No, this is where the Blu-ray mastering comes in, because normal Blu-ray writers already come pre-printed with a spiral on them, and that creates noise. You don't want that in general. But when you go to the factory, they have mastering systems. They put in their own optical encoders, and they can write any pattern, any distribution. They're not limited to a particular pattern at all. The only thing is you might have to convert your data to polar coordinates. Okay, so.
Well, thank you very much.